This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
France gets a new president. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Monday, May 8th. Glad you're on board. Here's what's up this hour.
A 39-year-old political novice was the easy winner in the French presidential election, but the challenges are only beginning for Emmanuel Macron.
The White House has a new strategy for helping its health insurance measure pass the Senate. We'll explain it in just a moment.
Texas has a new law in place that targets sanctuary cities. Officials can even be charged criminally if they don't enforce the law.
And a new look at American families' household debt.
You know, about 1 in 10 surveyed said their debt was more than $100,000, which I think makes that average higher for everyone. And that was not even including mortgages. So I think it really is that a lot of people have student loans, a lot of people have a lot of credit card debt. And, you know, it's something that we've seen before, but I think every time a survey like this comes out, it still continues to be pretty shocking.
Market Watch reporter Maria LaMagna on just how much some families are spending each month on debt. She's here in about 20 minutes. Well, France has elected its youngest president in history, sending Emmanuel Macron into office by a massive margin. The 39-year-old former investment banker captured 66% of the votes yesterday, overwhelming his opponent, Marine Le Pen. Mr. Macron, a political newcomer, campaigned on a promise to reform the heavily regulated economy in France, especially its labor practices, and fight a tide of nationalism sweeping the European Union.
I will do my utmost for the 5 years to come to make sure that they don't have any reason to vote for an extremist position ever again.
Spoke through a translator. Ms. Le Pen, meanwhile, who ran on a platform to pull the country out of the euro and close its borders to migrants, took just 34%. Mr. Macron has said the EU's future depends on whether it can overhaul stark economic imbalances among wealthier northern and poorer southern members, protect the bloc from terror attacks, and control a recent wave of migration. The White House hopes that problems in the insurance market will help get its health care measure through the Senate. Early signals have raised the prospect of no insurance companies offering coverage in parts of Iowa and Tennessee, and of premium surges in states such as Virginia and Maryland. Maine Senator Susan Collins was on ABC's This Week.
The House bill is not going to come before us. The Senate is starting from scratch. We're going to draft our own bill, and I'm convinced that we're going to take the time to do it right.
The Wall Street Journal says insurance companies have cited a combination of reasons for their decision to pull out of markets or raise rates. Most prominent among them, a sicker-than-expected group of enrollees under Obamacare and years of turbulent implementation. But also a lack of conviction that the law would remain in place and make their risk-taking worthwhile. Many insurers have complained of prolonged uncertainty over reimbursement they get to subsidize deductibles. Well, by passing the American Health Care Act to replace Obamacare, Republicans seem to be ensuring, at least right now, that health care could be a big factor in the 2018 midterm elections. More from Wall Street Journal reporter Reed Epstein. Reed, what's the landscape?
A lot of these are districts that elected Republicans to Congress but voted for Hillary Clinton in the last presidential election. We've seen the health care bill that Republicans passed remains highly unpopular with the public. In part because Republicans have not done a very good job of explaining what's in it, and they have largely ceded the ground to what has become an energized and activated Democratic base that is bent on attacking the bill and explaining to people what sort of benefits that they'll lose based on this Republican legislation.
Surely Republicans knew this or are aware of it, and they certainly remember how, following passage of the Affordable Care Act in, 2009, Democrats were hurt in the 2010 elections, right? Hasn't this all been calculated in some way?
Well, and so part of the pickle for Republicans is their they're stuck between a couple of options that are neither one is terribly attractive. So they chose to pass this piece of legislation that, by all accounts, will roll back guarantees of health insurance for some 20 million people. Their other option was to not do that and essentially renege on a promise that they had been making over the course of the last decade to voters to repeal and replace Obamacare with something else. And the thing to remember is almost all of these Republicans in the past Congresses have voted for laws that go much farther than the one that they passed. The question is whether voters are truly by next November paying enough attention to hold them accountable or reward them for this, for enacting legislation that in almost all likelihood won't go into effect by next November.
Mm. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Reed Epstein about his piece entitled House Bill Makes Healthcare a Swing Factor for Midterms, looking ahead to next November's elections. Would Republicans help themselves, I guess, by passing something else legislatively and calling it a victory?
Well, they certainly call it a victory. On Thursday, you saw Donald Trump sort of hosting the victory press conference in the Rose Garden at the White House, which is a highly unusual scene, given that the Senate is certainly going to rewrite this piece of legislation from top to bottom. It's months away from having something that can go to the president's desk to be signed. But there is no question that they are interested in calling it a victory, sort of regardless of the distance between where we are now and having Obamacare actually be repealed and replaced with something else.
What if the Senate can't pass something? Then what happens to those House seats that, according to that Cook Political report on Friday morning, have been flipped from Republican to, say, Democratic leaning or maybe a toss-up?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to depend a lot on what the messaging is, what the larger political narrative and picture is going forward.
Essentially, how high on the priority list will it be next November, right? Americans might say, listen, we like the leadership when it comes to foreign policy. We like the way the economy is humming along. Therefore, this debate over health insurance is not as high as it once was on our list.
Right. And what you hear from a lot of Republicans is that the thing that will turn the next elections is whether they can get tax reform done, whether they can cut people's taxes and have people get more money in their pockets, and that tax reform wasn't possible without doing health care first. And if this is sort of the first of many promises that Donald Trump and the Republicans made on the campaign trail that they're able to fulfill, it'll be a different picture than if they have very little to show for their efforts.
Thanks, Reed. Wall Street Journal reporter Reed Epstein. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
If you're familiar with cloud computing, you probably know that Amazon Web Services offers a complete set of secure compute, storage, application, and deployment services that help companies launch and scale their IT infrastructures while lowering costs. But did you know that you're still responsible for protecting your own AWS-based assets, meaning your applications and data, from advanced cyber threats? Protect your AWS with Barracuda Networks Advanced Firewall Solutions. Visit AWS Marketplace or Barracuda.com/AWS to learn more.
Glad you could be with us. Welcome into a Monday. Texas Governor Greg Abbott has signed a bill that prevents cities and counties from enacting sanctuary laws that prevent local police from asking about the immigration status of anyone they detain, whether they're arrested or stopped for a traffic violation. He signed the measure yesterday on Facebook Live, offering no advanced public notice. He said similar laws have already been tested in federal court, where opponents have already been hinting the bill will immediately be challenged.
Citizens expect law enforcement officers to enforce the law, and citizens deserve lawbreakers to face legal consequences.
One of the provisions allows for criminal charges against officials who intentionally refuse to comply with federal efforts to deport illegals who already have been jailed on other offenses. Protests have been intense for months. About 20 people were charged with criminal trespassing last week after a sit-in at a state building, and one Democratic lawmaker took up a 3-day hunger strike. This portion of the program is brought to you by Shari's Berries. The weekend coming up is an important one. In case you haven't noticed, it's Mother's Day. Be sure this year to make all the moms in your life feel special. Might not only be your mom, right? Could be your sister. Could be your wife. There's still time to send Shari's Berries huge, freshly dipped strawberries to mom starting at $19.99 plus shipping. And even though you waited until the last minute, there is an exclusive offer for you. Double the berries for mom for just $10 more, and she'll get free cake truffles as well. Go to berries.com, click the microphone in the top right corner, and type in the code FIRSTNEWS. Trust me, the moms in your life will be so happy you took the time and sent these delicious berries. They are a great treat. The berries are big, they are fresh, and they taste incredible. They're dipped in chocolatey goodness, then covered with nuts, chocolate chips, or additional drizzle. The only way to get this amazing berries deal starting at just $19.99 is to visit berries.com. Click on the microphone in the top right corner and use my code FIRSTNEWS. Then double your berries for mom and get free cake truffles before they run out. Berries.com. That's berries.com. And click the code FIRSTNEWS when you click on the mic. It is 20 minutes now after the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, it has taken only 3 years for Emmanuel Macron to rise from being an unknown government advisor to be elected France's youngest head of state since Napoleon, elected on Sunday. Several months before his 40th birthday, the centrist turned back a wave of economic and political nationalism that helped Britain vote for Brexit and Donald Trump to be elected U.S. president. Macron addressed his supporters in these translated remarks.
Our task is enormous. And it will impose that we should build, from tomorrow onward, a real majority, a strong majority.
Macron will be the youngest leader in the current group of seven major industrial nations. The White House is hoping to harness insurance market issues in some states to help lift the GOP's health care measure over the remaining hurdles in Congress. With a House GOP health bill now before the Senate, White House aides say their job may be easier as health insurers in the next few weeks make final decisions about where to sell coverage next year and how to price it. But Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York says opposition is overwhelming.
My Senate office phones have been flooded with calls, and for that, I am very grateful. Folks should keep it up.
Democrats say the better course is to shore up the Affordable Care Act rather than replace it. North Korea has detained a U.S. citizen on suspicion of hostile acts against the regime. He is the second professor working at Pyongyang University of Science and Technology to be detained in recent months. The university says he was doing agricultural development work. Behold the power of profanity. Researchers in Britain have discovered that a potty mouth can make us physically stronger. In one experiment, people completed an intense bicycle exercise after swearing and not swearing. Another group completed a grip test after both swearing and not swearing. Those who swore in the first experiment produced more power, and those who cursed in the second test displayed a stronger hand grip. Other research shows that swearing makes people more able to tolerate pain.
Wow. Sure, it's not the actual gritting your teeth. It's saying
swearing.
Of the curses, huh?
Try it at the gym later.
Is there a degree? Like could you grip something or lift something heavier if you used the F-bomb versus, you know, lesser curse words?
I did not see the details.
I just think it's worthy of further study. Thanks, Jen. 22 minutes now after the hour. On this morning, America's First News. Glad you could be with us on this Monday. How about this for a stat? Some 40% of Americans with debt are spending up to half of their monthly income paying it back. And MarketWatch personal finance reporter Maria LaMagna says that may not even be enough to cover how much they owe. Maria, give us some of the findings.
You know, about 1 in 10 surveyed said their debt was more than $100,000, which I think makes that average higher for everyone. And that was not even including mortgages. So I think it really is that a lot of people have student loans, a lot of people have a lot of credit card debt, and, you know, it's something that we've seen before, but I think every time a survey like this comes out, it still continues to be pretty shocking.
Wow. So what has happened here? Is this a growing number, for example?
Yes. So credit card debt is growing, mortgages also growing, student loans growing a lot. So all of those things sort of combined. Actually, auto loans are a quickly growing segment also. And so all of that is sort of contributing. you know, actually housing related debt is actually down since its 2008 peak. So we haven't gotten back up to that amount of housing related debt. But basically everything else is growing.
Wow. Geez, since when? Is this kind of the, pent up demand coming out of the recession that we started putting stuff, say, on credit cards or buying more expensive cars? What's up?
Right. So some experts that I spoke to said it can be seen as a sign of optimism if people are saying, okay, I feel good about my job. I feel good about my earning power in the future. I'm going to go ahead and make that car purchase. I'm going to go ahead and, you know, buy that couch and put it on my credit card. So that's not all bad as long as we're able to actually pay the debts off. But as we're seeing, that doesn't happen all the time. We've also seen really low numbers of Americans saving. So only about 21% about 21% of Americans aren't saving any of their income. And 13% say that's because of their debt. So, it's not all bad to put something on credit, obviously, but you have to make sure that you're saving at the same time and that you're not consumed by debt, which it seems like a lot of people are.
Yeah. We're speaking with MarketWatch personal finance writer Maria LaMagna. Her piece is called 40% of Americans spend up to half of their income servicing debt. So as you point out and you alluded to, some debt is an investment in the future, right? Your home, your car, education. But
yes.
What the head scratcher here is when you start throwing on entertainment, hobbies, things like that, that's a slippery slope.
Right. And a lot of people who responded to the survey said that that was a huge temptation for them and that they continued to be kind of caught in this cycle where they're not reducing their discretionary spending to put that money toward debt. And they're just continuing to spend and just watching that number get bigger. And I think a lot of it is anxiety. I think a lot of people just don't want to think about how much in debt they are and can't sort of wrap their mind around that idea. But obviously that has huge consequences and can really keep you trapped for the future and really limit your options. So it's definitely not a good thing if you can't actually deliver on paying it back.
Thanks, Maria. MarketWatch personal finance writer Maria LaMagna. It's a big stat, right? Up to half their income, 40% of Americans on debt. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us on this Monday, May 8th. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Kashenka here. Some of our top stories and headlines. Macron easily wins the French presidential election. New law is targeting sanctuary cities in Texas. Two former Obama administration officials testify on Capitol Hill today about alleged Russian election interference. Court hearings for Trump's latest immigration rule today. North Korea has detained a second U.S. professor. The Mets have suspended pitcher Matt Harvey, who thinks team rules don't apply to him. And the big debate unfolding in Britain. That story in about 20 minutes. It's time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. If you want to take your business to the top, take it to a top 10 state for business, Michigan. Contact MichiganBusiness.org today. Not to revisit an old wound, if you were one of the thousands of flyers inconvenienced by Delta during spring break, but the disruption by thunderstorms in Atlanta led to an epic meltdown for the usually reliable airline. At the root of 4,000 canceled flights, get this, telephone busy signals. Say what? Here's Wall Street Journal airline writer Scott McCartney. Scott, take us through this.
Let's go back to spring break, the first week of April. Planes are full. Delta's actually short-staffed because a lot of the folks in Atlanta are on spring break and they're vacationing as well. And they get thunderstorms on Monday. They recover on Tuesday. They call in a bunch of reserves to deal with the recovery, and then they get hit again Wednesday. They get hit again hard. There were more delays and cancellations than ever before in Delta's history from thunderstorms on that day. And that storm actually continues up to New York and hits Delta there. So severe thunderstorm impact, and usually it would take a day or two to recover, but Delta had a complete meltdown and did not recover flight-wise until Sunday or so. And in terms of getting people, there were hundreds of thousands of people affected, getting people who were stranded somewhere, it took well into the next week. So the question was, what happened? Why was the recovery so bad? And Delta launched its own investigation, and it turns out, almost unbelievably, that the main problem was the crews, pilots and flight attendants, had to call in to get assignments and get their questions answered, and the phone lines were overwhelmed, and all they got were busy signals.
Wow.
And so you had... You had this this situation where they had pilots and flight attendants ready to go, but they couldn't get their assignments because every time they called, all they got was a busy signal.
How appreciative, by the way, is Delta of United dragging that passenger off of that one plane that they had right around the same time?
You know, yeah, it's a really interesting dynamic because Delta was full-blown into their meltdown when Sunday night United had had the episode and completely took the focus off of Delta. So from... From that regard, I think it certainly made a public there was a public relations difference.
Yeah.
for the hundreds of thousands of people who were stranded by Delta, or you know, his school groups who couldn't make their trip to Europe and for spring break, and people stuck all over the place worldwide. For them, certainly Delta's problem was front and center.
Mm. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal airline writer Scott McCartney. His piece is called "What Caused an Epic Meltdown at Delta." All right, so we got these storms. The pilots and crews are calling in. They can't get in because the lines are jammed. People are not getting their assignments. Flights are canceled. That said, we are heading into summer where there are these scattered thunderstorms which can seemingly pop up out of nowhere. What's Delta going to do then for the summer?
Yeah, I think so. They do have an action plan. They have already, by June, they'll have more phone lines in place. They'll have more people in place. They say they're going to double the number of people who work in crew tracking. They're also cross-training people from other departments that they can pull in a crisis and deal with that. By August, they're going to have hotlines set up in their crew lounges and airport hub offices. So pilots and flight attendants could actually go to the crew room and pick up a hotline and talk to somebody. They're putting these things in place, and I think they're more aware of the problem. I think there's still the potential for major problems from disruptions.
All right. Be warned, right? Wall Street Journal airline writer Scott McCartney, who's based in Dallas. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us on this Monday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, here's a story for all the mass transit commuters out there. Passengers on a New York City commuter rail line are fighting back against a man they say takes up 4 seats every day on the train into Grand Central Station. This can be a big problem, as you know, Gordon. The 41-year-old man, identified as Steve, has been photographed lying down and putting his feet up on the seats, causing more riders to have to stand and then getting the seats dirty for other passengers. Some passengers are fed up and have complained to officials not only about Steve himself, but also about the train conductors who allow him to hog 4 seats every morning unchallenged. Steve was interviewed by the New York Post and pleaded for some compassion as he needs to catch up on sleep, he says, during his 90-minute daily commute that starts at 4:30 a.m.
What? What?
Well, first of all,
he's 41 years old.
Yeah.
And he's going to take up 4 seats.
Right.
Is this the Long Island Railroad?
This is a Metro North, I guess. So,
oh,
you know, so you got
goodness.
The 2 seats on one side, 2 seats on the other side.
Okay.
And he
kind of,
you know, he lays down on one, his feet go across, and he puts his feet on the other
seat. Wow.
Seats. Yeah, so he can sleep. Now, you know, again, you and I, the 4:30 a.m., we're not exactly, you know, throwing him a big sympathy party for
no.
a 4:30 a.m. Commute for one.
Right.
But two, I mean, you know what this is. You know how packed these trains can be and how every seat is precious. I mean, there's people standing every single morning, and to have somebody there, again, taking up the whole thing, nobody doing anything about it is a problem.
Not sure I can think of anything more selfish than what this guy has managed to do.
Yeah. I mean, you got to learn to sleep sitting up, you know.
Yeah,
that's
I
really
mean,
that's what you got to do. You know, you're not going to get a live flat bed in a on a commuter train.
That's unbelievable. He's lucky he survived this long.
Well, that's the thing, too. I mean, I mean, that was the surprising part to me, was that it's gone on this, because it's gone on for about a month, apparently, and it's every day for a month. It's gone on this long without somebody, you know, doing something to him.
Yeah.
Dropping something on him, throwing some water on him, something to wake him up.
That's unbelievable. I saw another headline today across the river in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Where New Jersey Transit, which carries hundreds of thousands of people to New York every day,
right,
is missing like $5 million because they can't get through the aisles to collect the tickets.
Yeah.
On the trains.
Yeah.
Going to New York. They've missed out on an estimated $5 million.
Yeah. Yeah. No, my brother's a conductor for New Jersey Transit, and mm-hmm. I know that is a problem.
Yeah. Listen,
they just have to give up at some point.
I can remember years ago when I commuted to New York, just holding that same ticket and nobody ever being able to make their way through the crowd to check the ticket.
Right. But
just,
every single seat was taken by a person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It wasn't somebody sleeping on four seats.
That we know for sure.
You certainly get killed in New Jersey for that.
And we all know, Gordon, that deer are seen as enduring symbols of wide-eyed innocence, as evidenced by the movie Bambi and the term doe-eyed. Turns out, maybe we've underestimated the deer. A study published in the Journal of Forensic Sciences last week reveals that deer have been caught chowing down on human remains. Popular Science reports that researchers left out a human body in the woods in 2014 and set up a motion-sensitive camera so that they could study what scavenging species would do to the corpse. A few months later, a camera caught a white-tailed deer with a human rib bone in its mouth. A few days later, another deer was spotted with a rib bone in its mouth like a cigar.
Okay. Can you just explain the one phrase, researchers left a human body out in the woods?
Yeah. I mean,
what happens there? Like, do you volunteer for this? Obviously before you are deceased?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I guess when you sign your body over to science, you know, maybe you can't get super specific, I guess, about what they do with it.
That is some bizarre research.
something to think about. Also something to think about on our commute every day when we have to dodge deer and what might happen to
us. Could be thrown out there to survive. That's a couple of bizarre stories you got there, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. It's Small Business Month, and Dell is celebrating innovators and job creators in a big way, like up to 40% off business PCs big. Even a free 1 terabyte external hard drive with select purchases big. Call 877-BUY-DELL today to connect with a U.S.-based advisor. They're ready to help with tech solutions tailored to your business, like finding just the right Dell PCs with Intel Core processors, because your hard work is more than appreciated, it's admired. Call 877-BUY-DELL today. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's...
Gordon, Texas Governor Greg Abbott took to Facebook Live last night to sign a law targeting sanctuary cities. The new law allows police officers to ask about a person's immigration status and threaten sheriffs with jail if they don't cooperate with federal authorities, including honoring requests to hold someone in jail while his or her immigration status is checked out for possible deportation.
This law cracks down on policies like the Travis County Sheriff, who declared that she would not detain known criminals accused of violent crimes.
Every major city police chief in Texas opposed the bill. A Republican senator says her colleagues plan to start from scratch when the House's health care bill goes to the Senate. Susan Collins of Maine told ABC's This Week there are major questions surrounding the bill that the House passed last week.
I don't think that low-income women should be denied their choice of health care providers for family planning, cancer screenings.
Critics claim the new legislation could make health care unaffordable and cause people to lose coverage, which Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price is denying. Sally Yates, the top Justice Department official in the Obama administration, is set to testify today about Russia's attempts to interfere in the presidential election. Senate Judiciary Committee member Dianne Feinstein told NBC News senators will be eager to hear what Yates has to say.
And she apparently has some information as to who knew what when that she is willing to share. And that would be what she knew about Michael Flynn's connections to Russia.
Yates was fired by the Trump administration in January after refusing to defend the president's travel ban in court. Archaeologists and conservation experts have met in Cairo to discuss the safe transportation of King Tut's throne, chests, and bed from the Egyptian Museum in central Cairo to a new one being built on the other side of the Egyptian capital. Moving items belonging to King Tut has become a sensitive issue since 2014 when the beard attached to the ancient Egyptian monarch's golden mask was actually accidentally knocked off. Workers later hastily tried to reattach it with glue, causing damage to the priceless artifact and causing an uproar among archaeologists around the world.
I don't like that story. Yeah, I remember that story. I don't like the way this sounds already. See these guys rolling up in some wheelbarrow with a flat tire, right? Guys, remember what happened last time? Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. There's plenty of debate in Westminster these days over legislation, what with Brexit and all. Now there's a particular argument over what those laws should be printed on. The Wall Street Journal says since medieval times, Parliament has recorded its acts on sheep and goat skins made into parchment, and since 1849 only on vellum, which is a fine calfskin. Now penny-pinching parliamentarians have pushed forward a plan to switch to paper. Vellum costs Parliament roughly $45 for a bulk shipment, including delivery tax and printing, versus about 32 cents for archival paper. Rancor over the worth of that difference has pitted traditionalists against modernists. By the way, one guy who's member of the Scottish National Party says it's all falling apart, basically. He was irritated this year when the House of Commons clerks cast aside their wigs, ending a 300-year custom. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.